Hi, and welcome back to episode number 302. We have a great episode for you today, which I'm really excited about. I'm interviewing Andrew Hume. He is the CEO of Probe Group. Probe Group have come from relative obscurity until recently, when they have been in the news for a series of acquisitions. Over the last few months, they have spent well into nine figures acquiring a number of outsourcing competitors and suppliers. In early 2020, they announced the acquisition of Microsourcing and BPO, two Australian BPOs. They have recently just announced the merger with Stellar. The new combined Probe Group now boasts over 12,000 staff and revenues of $500 million. Probe is not ruling out further acquisitions and have also suggested an IPO. All of this has happened across the most volatile trading environment the world has ever seen with Corona. So it was great to catch up with Andrew to check on his stress levels and his vision for the future of Probe, as well as the prospects for outsourcing in the new normal. If you want any of the show notes, if you want any of the links that we have discussed, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcasts. Enjoy. Andrew Hume, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Derek. Delighted to be here.
We will get your backstory and dive into Probe Group's recent successful spate of acquisitions. But first, can you tell me your vision for outsourcing and how it adds value to global industry?
Well, I have a vision for the industry that sort of links to the way we're building out our business. And I mean, in simple terms, we can typically do it better, faster for clients than sometimes they can themselves due to other restraints, constraints in and around their business. We can help them bring the future forward very quickly. From a vision perspective, and this is sort of how I see our business and our role in the industry, but I think we're a unique industry in that we represent so many different companies, so many different industries. We're a wonderful place to work. We can offer people such depth and breadth of work and work progression, skill progression, career progression. So we should be, and I'm trying to build a business that is the destination, the go-to business for great jobs to build a career. And I think we have the potential to do that more than any other industry because we represent all industries.
Yeah, it's very powerful and far-reaching, isn't it? And that's why I mentioned global industry, because it really touches every aspect of every industry.
It definitely does. And I mean, just one simple example, the CFO in our business popped out of uni, accounting graduate, took a part-time job on the phones in a call center, and is now the CFO of a very large business. So we can create wonderfully meaningful and lifelong career journeys for people.
Yeah, absolutely. So you seem to be doing well with that mission, Andrew. Probe Group wasn't really on the map 2 years ago, and now it's very much on the map. In July, you were in the news again for the recent announcement of the merger between your own group and Stellar. The deal will create a combined group of over 12,000 agents with, I think, about $500 million US in revenues. That's fantastic. Do you want to give us a bit of background into Probe Group and I suppose the origin story of you know, how you've suddenly shot into everyone's awareness?
Yes, I'd be delighted to. And I've had the benefit of being in the industry for some 20 years and having been CEO of a number of organisations in Australia in the industry and seen what works and what doesn't work from the inside and the outside. I joined Probe 4 odd years ago. We had a very clear and defined plan to aggregate and scale up players and to create a truly credible, well-backed, capable Australian BPO business that was big enough with enough credibility and capability to compete meaningfully on a global footing. And we think that that's fundamentally important and a wonderful opportunity for the Australian consumer and equally the Australian businesses to have a local player that can deliver them solutions from a business that's just around the corner. Probe was originally a credit and collections specialist, born in Melbourne all the way back in 1979, had become a very scaled provider in that segment of the broader BPO market space, representing with a very integrated value chain of activity through the whole credit management scope of works. With a wonderful client base representing utility companies and local and international banks and Australian government. So it was a great business with the potential to do a lot more. So Probe embarked on a strategy initially to go beyond collections, which we did very quickly, successfully. Effectively for us, we looked at the customer contact life cycle, interactions life cycle, and said, well, we're at the, if you think about the cycle of interactions from acquiring customers through provisioning them, servicing them, retaining them, managing loyalty all the way through to recovery. We started in the recovery piece and have swum upstream organically. We doubled the business very quickly. That got us to the point where we were able to embark on the first phase of our roll-up strategy, and that was to acquire a business that I'd previously been CEO of, which was Cellmate's contact business, a business that had been big but had started to shrink. So we were very pleased to buy that back and breathe life into it and use that to help us really evolve our capability and breadth of offering. That was mid 2018, May 2018. And we progressed for another 12 months after that, continuing to integrate the businesses and keep growing organically. And that got us to the point where we were then able to execute the next part of our strategy, which was to go beyond customer experience, beyond customer management, across into shared services and knowledge services. So we bought a couple of other businesses, two Philippines-based organisations, one in quick succession, December last year and January this year, BPO being one and Microsourcing the other. And that sort of got us up to close to, well, a bit over actually, 300 million in revenues and 8,500 staff across operations in Australia, New Zealand and the Philippines. And then the COVID whirlwind hit the market and the world. We'd been in discussions actually a little bit ahead of that around the next acquisition, which was Stellar. We then worked pretty heads down and fast through the COVID phase to work on that acquisition. And that we pop out of that now as a some 12,500 employee strong business with operations across six countries. Clearly the scaled Australian BPO with service offerings across the full spectrum of work from customer management, customer experience through shared services, finance and accounting and technical help and support desks through to sort of very specialist knowledge services in and around content moderation and web app development and SEO and SEM support and other like tasks. So we've now evolved as really the big Australian BPO that can compete meaningfully on a global stage. At the heart of the business is a what I call digital enablement practice, which is an investment we've been making in building out customer experience consulting capability advisory practice that can define future operating models. And by saying that, what I mean is a group of very skilled people that span the breadth of tasks like business Lean Six Sigma, skill business process re-engineering, process simplification, customer journey mapping, workforce optimization, automation, digitization, opportunity identification, design, build, deploy, and manage across the sort of core spectrums of work, automation work around robotic process automation, AI, ML powered capability, data analytics, and conversational AI, including virtual agents and chatbots, and through to full natural language based automation solutions and biometric verification. So a fairly powerful tech enablement at the heart of the business that effectively enables us to hold our clients' hand and walk them into the future, into this future that is enshrouded by everything to do with digital and its impact on commerce.
The outsourcing industry is a bit of a, I see it as a sleeping giant. You know, it's a big industry, but not huge. It has a lot of impact on a lot of businesses, but, you know, not a lot of consumers are really aware of it. And there's not really a lot of external investment into the industry. There's not really a lot of exciting M&A activity, roll-ups as you've been doing. You know, back in 2018, I think it was a pretty exciting year. TaskUs was invested in by Blackstone at a $500 million valuation. Transcom bought Awesome OS. Concentrix merged with Convergys, but really there isn't a lot of activity. What was your sort of strategy in terms of the roll up and obviously, you know, it's to grow through acquisition. Did you feel that's a better opportunity than, you know, building out organically?
Well, we've been doing both consistently, and ahead of the most recent acquisition, most of our growth had been organic over and above acquisitive inputs, and that's obviously changed now with the recent Stellar acquisition, which is at some significant scale. There's been a very consistent thread of M&A activity through the local market, really across my journey with it. I mean, all the way back to my sort of entry back in 1990. The market shape in our part of the world, the competitor set has changed fundamentally. And this is obviously linked to globalization. The companies we competed with back then are different to the companies we compete with now. There have been acquisitions in the Australian market. A number of the big global sort of mega BPOs have bought businesses in Australia over the journey. There has been a fairly consistent level of activity around that, and I think that's been the preferred market entry model for sort of the major global players over and above setting up their own local operations. So there has been a consistent level of activity. It just hasn't been perhaps as visible or evident. We had a very clear view that it was important in this sort of global world to get bigger faster. And that's important because we see a fundamental shift from traditional contracting schemas where, you know, they're more transactional or typical sort of RFP type processes, and find ourselves in much more significant strategic investment engagements with our clients around how to help them transform their business and bring forward a sort of five-year plan to today. And that can involve, that involves very significant investments and specific infrastructure and buildings and people and skills and technology and automation solutions. And to be able to do that well and consistently and across a broad array of clients and industries, we need a certain scale. We need a strong balance sheet and an ability to invest. So it was important for us to stay ahead of market demand to get bigger. And that really fueled the investment, the acquisition investment strategy for us.
And in terms of your future strategy, are you eyeing any more acquisitions, or are you looking to bed down your existing portfolio now?
No, we see a fundamental opportunity to keep acquiring strategic capability that fits with our strategy. So we're by no means finished on our journey of building, you know, the world's greatest BPO.
And back in, you know, you did a lot of activity, and Microsourcing was a pretty significant acquisition, and well done on that. But and then COVID happened in March, you know, just after your BPO and Microsourcing acquisition. And, you know, as you've just mentioned now, you were already working on the Stellar acquisition. What has changed for you and your business and your perception in outsourcing, you know, before and after the event of COVID?
Yes, well, it's taught everybody how to think and behave differently, really, fundamentally. Interestingly, I built a work from home business in Australia, pure play work from home, where everybody, no, we didn't meet anybody. People were recruited online, trained online, performance managed online, back in about 2006, 2007. And it was successful to a point. We could scale it. We scaled it back then to about 500 people across Australia and New Zealand, and couldn't really get it to go much bigger. And the greatest sort of barrier to growth with it was data security and concerns around InfoSec. And between, fast forward to today, technology's improved fundamentally. Everything's in the cloud, or if it isn't, it's sort of rapidly moving that way. COVID has given a lot of naysayers permission to sort of break through and give it a go. And now that it's happened, I'm a fundamental believer that it's here to stay. Not here to stay in the context that it's a replacement, but it's a nice component of any delivery model. Plays a key role and should play a key role in any intelligent design around customer interaction management or business solutions management going forward. So I think that's one of the really big learnings from for the industry at large, the result of COVID. It is okay to deploy people to work, and I'll use the term remotely because it doesn't have to be at home. It can be from anywhere. And that was why I was always a real believer in the model, because we're not, as people, all the same. We have different preferences, and we should be able to work in a manner that suits our unique preferences. And that can be time of day, place of work, length of work, type of work, you name it. So work from home provides that wonderful opportunity, and it's now embedded just into the way we do things. I think post-COVID, some work will go back to premises. There will continue to be some pure play and growth in pure play deployments, but it will become a very important adjunct to most operating designs. The other learning that has washed through the market is risk. I think everybody, most outsourced engagements had business continuity plans, and they'd been tested when storms hit and typhoons and things, but nobody had really considered the impact of a pandemic. So I think there's now a fundamental rethink occurring across the market in terms of country risk. Have people overinvested in one country to create risk for themselves, and that's fueling decisioning now in terms of risk diversification between countries, and even repatriation decisioning around what work should be located in which location.
Some industries obviously have been absolutely decimated by coronavirus. And I remember as well back to 2008, where some of the world's, most intelligent people really feared, this is in the financial crisis, that the whole financial system was broken and might be beyond repair. And I think the coronavirus is something similar, where, we're really going through incredible sort of economic depression, and just reconfigurement of entire society. You sound very upbeat and very confident that in terms of outsourcing, the fundamentals are still there. Is that true? And in terms of your revenues, has it sort of taken a toll, or you're relatively resilient? This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
We've been growing consistently all the way through. It hasn't stalled our growth. In fact, it's accelerated it. I'll use a term that's very Australian and local to us, but we went through some different phases of lockdown. So there was an initial lockdown phase back in March. We added over 1,000 people domestically working from home over a sort of 3-4 week period through late March, early April, earlier in the year. Domestically, now that they're big numbers in our country, not necessarily big in a US or Philippines context, but huge numbers domestically, and that was supporting businesses that were looking to repatriate work because they had business failure offshore. They couldn't get their work delivered the right way. It was also supporting businesses who were experiencing what I call channel shift. So retail is a good example where they might have had single digit percentages of business through online channels, and all of a sudden with COVID there's a massive shift to 50, 60, even more percent of their business online. So there's a need to support the online channels. So it became a real boon for growth for us, and because we sent our business into a work from home footing very early in the piece, and given our operations are all cloud based, it was a fairly quick and easy migration. By doing that so quickly, we were in a position to actually then start servicing the market over and above our internal business demands. So that became a very positive period for us. And through that, we've found and onboarded long-term ongoing clients that sort of came to us initially just for a bit of emergency help and emergency repair. In terms of the second part of your question, is the value proposition of outsourcing? I think it's even more paramount, the value now in this kind of environment than before. Our business, and I'm sure a lot of our competitive businesses, I'm not sure whether they're quite as attuned to this as we are, but our business is built for speed. I don't like the word agile, but we are nimble, fast, entrepreneurial, adaptive, curious, fast movers. We do things at light speed, and organisations, particularly when times are tough, need reactive, quick responses. And it's very often hard to move that fast inside an organisation where there's competition for funding and capital and decision making and resources. So quite often it's easier just to get someone to leapfrog you overnight to the future. And that's the benefit of outsourcing. We have the world's best technologies. If we haven't got it, we get it really quickly. We've got extremely talented people, diversification of people across countries. We can pull that together to weave incredible solutions that add real value very quickly. Hard to do in an internal environment.
As an industry matures, there's a risk, and I see this in the outsourcing industry, that there's a risk of commoditization, of price wars, of everything, of all margins being sort of swept away. And you see this, I think, in a lot of Australian BPOs, the BPOs that focus more in the SME sector, where there's more seat leasing, staff leasing. And it becomes almost like a budget airline where you're just paying for the seat and everything else is at cost. Where do you see, I suppose, the future for Probe Group, but the future for the outsourcing industry? I suppose, the two extremes are, one is full value add. It's almost consulting. It's technology enhancement, almost management consultation, versus the basic run-of-the-mill staff augmentation and seat leasing.
Yeah, I think there's no future at the bottom end of the market. I think competing on price is not sustainable, and a simplistic approach to solving problems, quite frankly. I think businesses that we compete with who do what I call defend the moat, which is trying to protect traditional FTE positions, are going to go the way of the dodo. Businesses to survive must continue to evolve and adapt and change. And the only way you do that is through adding value. Whole philosophy core to our business is a culture built around one word, and that word is passion. We believe that passion is the fuel that energizes creative thinking. Passion is the fuel that gives people the courage and the permission and the conviction to put their hand up and contribute an idea, whether it be a big transformative idea or a simple idea like how to handle this conversation differently and share the benefits of that. Passion is the fuel that triggers that. So it's critical in our view. I've never met a client in my entire journey through the industry who walked in the next day and said, okay, right, stop. You've done enough. That's it. Everybody always continually needs more, needs better, needs faster, needs more effective, more and more commercially acute. The way to survive and win in that environment is through creating value. And that means designing solutions that are not about just the cheapest price. Anybody can do that. It's a race to the bottom. It's about architecting a reinvented business model that helps the client deliver their business mission faster, better, and more commercial, on a more commercial footing. And that's why, as a business, we're investing so aggressively into data and data analytics and robotics and process improvement and natural language technologies and all of that wrapped into very smart consulting analysis, interpretation, and business modeling. Fundamental to our view of how to build success.
Do you see, you know, one of the issues with the industry is if clients become too successful, if they have too many staff, there's always, because one of the, you know, most significant value adds of offshoring is the fact that it's done offshore at a cheaper price than can be done domestically. And one of the risks is that, you know, as a client gets too big, they have the opportunity of just, you know, building the operation offshore themselves. And, you know, every business experiences this sort of leakage, effectively a problem of too much growth or success. Do you see that in your business? And is it through sort of value add and, you know, the service side of things that you prevent that leakage?
No, we don't see it in our business because I think we deliver great outcomes consistently and better. I haven't seen much evidence that they're really. I mean, there's been a constant talk about through business and academic circles around build, operate, transfer as a model for outsourcing. It hasn't ever really kicked off. I mean, it does happen here and there, but. And for some companies who have a predetermined strategy to want to do it themselves, it's a short-term way to get to an outsourced position, an offshore position. But it's at the fringe of the industry, and I think that's where it'll stay. You either make a decision to invest and build it for yourself because you believe in doing it for yourself, and some companies are like that. I've seen companies that are like that shift from that position with changes in boards and changes in CEOs, so that position is never enduring. It can come and it can go back the other way. Our business's success has been built on building and operating and continuing to operate, and not just operating the way we did when we started it, but operating today for tomorrow. That's why intelligent design is critical to success. But no, I don't in and around our business haven't seen a trend away from that. Albeit, you know, sometimes some companies say, "Yep, yeah, no, I'm not a believer. I'll do it myself, and that's okay."
In terms of the offshore element, you know, I enterprise has embraced offshoring for decades now, and they're obviously the backbone of the industry. As the world, you know, you were a pioneer as you developed remote work back in 2006. But much of the world and much of the SME market is slow to adapt to globalized workforce, slow to adapt to remote work. I think obviously the COVID has catalyzed that a lot now. As more people move online, you know, I think in two decades, everyone will be working globally. They'll be working online And I think that will open up a globalized workforce as opposed to what has always historically been a localized workforce. Do you think that will, you know, be a massive boon for the industry, or do you think it could weaken the industry because the sort of offshore component, everyone's doing it anyway?
Well, not everybody has done it. And there are those that are still early entrants, and there are those that are still to come, and there are those that are still learning how to do it better. And that was one of the reasons we bought Microsourcing, because it has a very different delivery model that we think suits that sort of, you mentioned small to medium, but the mid market where and it's not, that's an unfair descriptor in itself, but companies who they can be large or small, really, it doesn't matter, but for whom the outsourcing decision is, they're a bit newer to it, they don't quite have the confidence with it, they don't want to let go as much control, so they like to remain actively involved in the management and delivery. And that's fine for those organisations, and we actually see a trend in that part of the market toward organisations as they mature, moving to a more fully outsourced construct. But the beauty of the model is that it opens up the market access to everybody, regardless of size, because the businesses are built for onboarding quickly and far more easy to set up a new operation in terms of time and complexity in that model than a full outsource solution. So I think that's one of the key successes of that business, and businesses like them, they've been able to really, it has enabled the size of the available market to fundamentally be enlarged.
There's a big sort of cliche fear of AI taking over the market, losing, you know, everyone losing their jobs, especially in the call center, well, not only in the call center industry, but globally around the world. You have said many times that you're focusing on technology enablement and enhancement of functions. Where do you see this? Do you see it as a threat or you know, something that can help the industry?
Oh, it's wonderful. Helped the industry in so many ways. And it's not, I've never been a believer in, you know, that it's a one way or the other way. It's going to remove jobs completely, and the no more. I mean, there was a famous quote in Australia at one point in time about, you know, there being no contact centre jobs in the future because of automation. It's a load of rubbish. I just fundamentally don't believe it. The future lies in augmentation, which is how the role technology plays to manage, to support interactions. Now, some interactions can be completely automated, and they should be, and others can't be and should never be. And the pathway between the two, the handoff or the interconnection point, is how you used, driven by how you use technology. And so I'm personally really fascinated by this because I think it leads to an uplifting in the complexity of the work that are performed by human beings, and the really simplistic transactional tasks that can be automated are. And that opens up all sorts of new areas of discovery around skilling and learning and career pathway design. And off the back of that new jobs being created, new types of roles being performed, and that I think leads to higher knowledge, higher skill, and higher remuneration. And I think that's a great, if we achieve that, work out how to achieve that, that's going to be a wonderful outcome across industry.
And what is your take more generally on innovation in the industry? Do you think it's an industry that's, you know, innovating and evolving all the time, or do you see it as an industry that's a little bit staid and it's sort of bums on seats doing repetitive tasks?
Oh, that depends on the nature of the company, I think. Industries are always an amalgam of so many different types of organisations. We're an innovator. We've won a lot of work because we've been seen. We've been brought into the mix to shake things up as a disruptor, and then we end up sort of taking over programs of work. And that plays to our cultural tone. We're agitators and quick thinkers, and, you know, we love the power of curiosity and invention. We love to just have a crack, try something today. If it doesn't work, we'll just try something slightly different tomorrow. We don't sort of sit in a room and incubate until we try to find, you know, build the rocket. You know, if you sit in the corner trying to build a rocket, it'll never lift off. It's already too late. So you just got to get on with things. So no, I, I, um, But then there are other businesses that don't and can't think and behave that way. So they've got to learn how to juggle the complexity of the future as it unfolds around us. But I think it'll be a bit harder for them.
You've mentioned a few times that you're an Australian business, and I see the Australian outsourcing market is pretty mature. There's quite a high level of awareness, and it's a slightly different outsourcing market to like the US, which is more sort of call center centric. Where do you see the value of Australian outsourcing or the uniqueness and what is that going to take to the world?
Well, research suggests that the Australian market is an immature outsourcer relative to, say, the US or the UK, just as two examples. In the context of data, sort of points to proportion of work outsourced being lower. So we see a thematic that will drive growth as we catch global best practice in that regard. And I think we're sort of already benefiting from that as in terms of domestic growth and opportunity. We're really built a regional powerhouse in our mind with more to do. We've got now physical operations in Australia, New Zealand, Philippines, the US, Malaysia, South Africa. So we're now across six countries. We've got a very large thousands of people that we employ in the Philippines supporting US consumers and US based clients. So we are now a global organization. Proudly born in Australia, but with extending tentacles.
Congratulations. And yeah, I mean, it must have been a white knuckle ride at parts of the sort of acquisition cycle with COVID happening, but it seems to have bore fruit. Are you staying branded as the Probe Group throughout, or are you maintaining the individual brands?
That's a wonderful question to ask, Derek. I'll be able to share more on that topic soon.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And if anyone wants to get in touch with you or learn more about the Probe Group, how can they do that, Andrew?
I'd be delighted to receive an email, andrew.hume@probegroup.com.au, or please visit our website, www.probegroup.com.au. Thank you very much for your time, Derek.
Thanks, Andrew, and good luck with that growth.
Thank you.
That was Andrew Hume. He is the CEO of Probe Group. If you want to get in touch with Andrew or know anything about anything that we spoke about in this podcast, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, do get in touch. Send us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.